Welcome to Church Marketing Conversations, where we dive deep into strategies and insights that empower churches to grow and thrive. Join us as we sit down with top church marketing experts, service providers, and innovators to explore what's working in church outreach today. This podcast is hosted by Jeremy G. Woods, CEO and co-founder of Faith Venture Media. Let's embark on this journey to impact communities for Christ, one conversation at a time.
Listening to the inaugural episode of the Church Marketing Conversations podcast, where church marketing experts, service providers for churches, and innovators in church marketing share strategies to help churches grow. I'm Jeremy G. Woods, Church Growth Coach and CEO at Faith Venture Media, a church marketing agency. Here with us today in our first episode is Mitch Whitten of Mirror Agency. Mitch is the marketing and sales lead for Mirror Agency. They build and manage websites for the Southern Baptist Convention, Baptist Press, Elizabeth Elliott Foundation, as well as many other local churches. Mitch, thanks for joining us here today. I'm thrilled to have you on this podcast. For those who may not know you, could you share a little bit about your background and how you came to combine ministry and digital marketing?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, thanks for having me on, Jeremy. I'm excited to talk about this with you. I think it's really overlooked. Actually doing marketing for churches, you know, especially for folks who may not have, you know, a mega church with 10,000 members and millions of dollars in a budget, stuff like that. It's probably even more important for smaller churches. And it's really cool that you're bringing that to light. But yeah, as far as my background goes, I started off my career like anybody else would, you know, going to college, kind of had plans to go into law. And as I was in school, I started to realize that the best way to impact the world was not through politics or through a traditional career path, but I felt like I should go into ministry. So I ended up leaving the school that I was at and moving back to go to a way cheaper school just so I could, you know, afford going into ministry, frankly. And through that, I kind of started preaching. I started a Bible study up in Northwest Indiana. And just through a series of events, a building ended up coming into play. And the Bible study grew to about 30 people or so. So this church building came open and they were like, hey, do you want it to start a church? I was 19 at the time. It was a terrible idea, probably, but I took them up on the offer and started a church plant. I was definitely in over my head. Like I said, I was 19, moving into 20. And for anyone listening, I would say, if you're in that situation, make sure that you get some guys with more experience behind you to help. So I did that for probably around a year. About that time, I met my wife. She was in Nashville at the time, which is where we live now. And between meeting her and, you know, just the inevitable reality that I was kind of in over my head, I ended up passing the church on to a gentleman who was older than I was, had some more experience, was probably more well-equipped to plant a church. So so that church is still going to this day.
Praise God.
God bless. Yeah, it's it's awesome that God's working that way. Kind of through the next few years, I worked at a couple churches. I was on staff, and I also worked a lot of normal people jobs. I was at Starbucks for a little while. Believe it or not, I actually sold cars for a little while too. Just kind of doing whatever I could while I was working at churches and serving in churches. And through all that, a friend of mine pulled me aside and he was like, hey, you're really good at selling stuff. How would you feel about starting a marketing agency with me? And I was like, I don't know anything about marketing. I don't really know why you would even be asking me. And he's like, marketing is the same thing as selling. So trust me. So I did that for several years and then moved on from that, worked in the corporate world, doing marketing and websites and project management, all that jazz. And then last year, Mirror Agency asked me to join on board. So I joined And it's been awesome. It's kind of a, I would say we live at the intersection of like digital marketing and church growth. So we pretty much our laser focus is ministries, nonprofits, and churches. That's really where we thrive. That's who we try to help. Like you said, we're the guys behind SBC.net. We're the guys behind Baptist Press. We're the guys behind Elizabeth Elliott's the Elizabeth Elliott Foundation website, and then hundreds of churches across the country. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So let's start with the Google Ad Grant. For those who aren't familiar, can you explain what it is and why it's such a valuable resource for churches?
Yeah, absolutely. So, kind of zooming out a little bit, I think when we think about the internet in a ministry context, we tend to think of it wrong. People like to badmouth things like social media and the internet, especially in the church world. We view it as this evil. Really, all it is it's a tool. So your church could be using the internet in three primary ways that I've identified. Jeremy, you probably have some other ways too, but they're kind of in three buckets. So I grew up very Baptist. And something that we did a lot is we would knock on doors to try to get people to come to our church, right? The traditional old school way to go there. And I think that the internet can be the equivalent of that for churches these days. So that's what I would call the Google Ad Grant in this case. So what it is Google, as a corporation, I don't know if it's for tax write-off purposes or whatever, but they offer up to $10,000 every single month to any nonprofit in the world. So in the States, it's 501c3 designations. In other countries, there's different designations. We've helped some folks in the UK with this as well. So it does work in other countries. There are some variances, but the grant is essentially just free ad spend for your church to use. You don't have to spend anything to get that. It's not like if you spend 100, then they'll match that. It's literally just free money that is sitting there for your church to use. So that ad grant is some reason folks tend to not really know about it. It's kind of been my personal mission to try to introduce this to as many churches as possible. Something that we started doing last year as an agency is we actually started setting this up for churches free of charge. So, yeah, they don't have to be our clients. If you're, just a small church in, rural Tennessee out where I live, and you would like someone to set up that $10,000 ad grant for you, we'll do it free of charge, no questions asked. I would so much rather you all have that money than Google, right? So, basically, you go through this application process. They verify that you're a legitimate 501c3. They verify that your website meets a few basic requirements. It's nothing too heavy. It's, usually just related to the amount of content that you have on your site and the speed of the site, basic items like that. And then they just make sure that you're not running ads for anything that is on their like no-fly list for nonprofit stuff. So, shockingly, religious organizations are not on that no-fly list as of January of 2025. So, definitely want folks to take advantage of that.
And what are some practical ways churches can use the grant to engage their communities and spread the gospel?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, we created a guide for this, and we're constantly updating it because there are a lot of ways that we're learning that folks can do it. I kind of like to lump it into three categories. You can tell I'm a Baptist preacher because I keep lumping everything into three categories. But the first category would be events. So we've seen people have a lot of success with basic events like Christmas Eve services, candlelight services, things that you would expect a church to have. So Christmas cantatas, Easter Sunday. All the basic events that most churches have do really well with these advertising grants. Folks in your community, even if they're not churched, they want to take their family to somewhere for Christmas, make sure that they see your church when they look it up, because they will Google it. That is how people use the internet. That is how people find things these days. And you can literally find those people for free. You can be at the very top of the Google search results. So the events are incredibly useful. You can also advertise more specific events that are localized to your church. So, there are ongoing events that people advertise for, like children's services on Wednesday nights, or VBS is a big one. Things like that, stuff that you just make up too. So if you have a community, I've seen a lot of churches have like community family fun day kind of deals where they have a block party. You can do a simple advertisement for things to do in blank city, and you'll show up for that. So it's pretty cool, really effective for events. And then the second category would be evergreen type searches, is what we would call them. So by evergreen, I mean works any time of year. It's not localized to any sort of event. So if someone's looking up church near me, or Bible believing church near me, Reformed church near me, very specific things like that you can advertise for. And then you can also advertise for broader things like what to do with your family in Washington, D.C. Items that people are just going to be Googling year round. It's a way for your church to have visibility. Folks may not even know that your church exists. And this is a really good way if someone's moving from out of town for them to find out that you're there. And the third category, I think, is the most interesting. And it's something that we've been experimenting with and had a lot of success with lately. So if you have your sermons online, or Bible studies online, or devotionals, or anything like that, you can run AdWords related to those sermons and those resources. So, for example, we have a church out in Kansas that we do this for, and they are doing a sermon series on suffering and a biblical view on suffering, how people can approach that, how people can find comfort in Christ through that. And that is the sort of ad that I think makes the most impact. If someone is looking up, man, I'm really depressed, or what is the meaning of life, or I'm suffering, I'm having a hard time. If someone is putting that into Google, which they do, it's a little bit shocking and frankly a little bit sad when you start looking up some of these statistics. There are literally tens of thousands of these searches every single day. And your church could be reaching those people directly, even when they're not in your community. So it's really cool, and it allows the word to get out there to people that you would never otherwise be able to. So we're seeing a lot of success with those, and that's the sort of ad campaign that, like, if one person clicks on your sermon because they searched, I'm having a really hard time with struggles in my life, that makes it worth it. So yeah, it's a really cool resource, man.
That's very helpful. And are there any common pitfalls churches run into with the Google Ad Grant, and how can they avoid them?
Yeah, so really, there are a couple of big struggles that this grant has. First of all, it is a $10,000 ad grant. That is what you are allotted. Very hard to spend $10,000 a month. Incredibly difficult. I'm sure that if you were actually spending your money, Google would let you do it. But because it's their money, they tend to be a little bit stingier. So the main thing that I would advise people to do is don't try to be specific with what you're doing. Do specific and do very broad. Just try to spend as much money as you can, because it's not your money, it's Google's money. And if you're using $10 a month as opposed to 500, you're not going to see the same results, right? You want to try to get that number up as high as you can. And then the second thing that I see folks run into is they lose the grant a lot of the time. So you have to maintain certain requirements. Some of them are a lot easier than others. So the biggest one that I've seen churches fall into that's just like an easy misstep to avoid is you don't want to target anything related to mental health. Google starts to view that as like a medical care kind of deal, and they don't cover that with this grant. So they will delist your ads, and they will potentially remove your account if you keep on reactivating those. So try to avoid those. If Google flags something, then don't ever run it again. The
Good
second thing,
advice.
absolutely. Second thing that's like quite a bit harder to maintain, to be honest with you, is a 5% click-through rate. So if you've ever run ads before, you know that a 5% click-through rate is pretty high. That's an impressive click-through rate. And if you are consistently getting lower than that, then Google will remove your campaign. So it's not the end of the world. You can still do other campaigns, but you definitely want to monitor that. You should be getting in there every single week to make sure that stuff is performing, that you're removing ads that aren't performing as well, that you're modifying them, that you're adding assets, that you're changing headlines, that you're trying to use headlines that are super catchy and make people want to click. Because getting that 5% click rate is necessary to keep the grant long term. And then, kind of the final mistake that I see people make a lot is they don't make their website match the stuff that they're running ads for. So, if you have a really good kids program on your, at your church and you want to run ads for that, make sure that your website reflects that with up-to-date content. So, if you just have a kids page that shows pictures of Awana from 2017 and has no words on it, this ad grant won't work for you. You need to have content that matches the ads. It needs to be pretty robust. If you're running ads to sermons, I would recommend including transcripts on the sermons. If you write your sermons ahead of time, that's a piece of cake. Whenever I preach, I've tried writing transcripts. To be honest with you, I struggle with it. So I tend to just have bulleted points. But there is a there's a whole slew of AI transcription services out there now that are completely free. You just pop the audio in there, they'll give you a transcript. You copy and paste that onto your website, and that'll really help make these ads more effective. So, yeah, you just want to make sure that your website has all the content, has stuff that's up to date, has stuff that's relevant, and isn't going to be running so slow that Google can't, that you get high bounce rates. So, those are kind of the three big areas that I see churches struggle with.
And I was gonna add also using YouTube transcript as well. You can like click on the description and then get this transcript from there. Of course, you have to fix it up, but
Yeah, that's a great call. That's probably easier than any of the AI ones. But yeah, I love that.
And so you believe having a great up-to-date church website is essential. So why is this critical for churches today?
Yeah, so I alluded to this in the beginning. There are three things that the internet can do to your church, do for your church, and for, I would say, the church at large. The first one is kind of that door knocking aspect, engaging people that would never otherwise engage with your church. The second one is welcoming people. So here's what I mean by that. Statistics have shown these are starting to get a little bit out of date. I imagine they're probably quite a bit higher now. But back in 2021, I think it was Gallup did a research study on how many people look up a church online before they visit it. And it was over 70% of people will go to your website before they ever step foot in your church. I imagine that number is even higher now because people are using the internet more and more and not less. So the analogy that I like to use is if you hired me as a consultant for your church to say, hey, how come my church isn't growing? We're kind of capped at, let's say, 200 people. We have enough seats for 400. We just can't break through the barrier. And I show up to your church on a Sunday morning. And I pull into the parking lot and I can't really find a good place to park. There's no visitor parking out front. All the spots are taken. And I'd have to parallel park up the street. Okay, that's kind of a minor nuisance, not a giant deal, but just a small barrier to entry, right? So I parallel park, I walk a block down the street, and I walk into your church doors. First thing that happens is no one greets me. I walk in and there's just people milling about. There's kids running around, and I feel a little bit out of place already, right? I also notice that there's a coffee station over to the side, and I haven't had my morning coffee yet. So I go over there to get some coffee. I go to the carafe. I try to pour it out, and it's empty. Okay, so No coffee, no one's really talked to me yet. And I also noticed there's like a little bit of a musty smell, like maybe there was some mold in the carpet. And it's just kind of unpleasant, right? So I'm feeling pretty uncomfortable. But you know, whatever. It's 10:30, service is starting. I walk through the front doors into the sanctuary, and I can't really find a seat. People are sitting on the edges of the pews, and I finally, you know, awkwardly make my way past some people. They have to stand up. They're kind of annoyed. I sit down, and it's this hard pew that's uncomfortable, and I sit there, and then I go through the service, right? There are about a dozen things that just happened, and none of them I would say are like preaching issues or issues with doctrine or anything like that. But these are all things that practically make it a lot harder for somebody to feel engaged in your church, for someone to feel welcome, and for people to want to show up again, and people ultimately to join your church, right? Your website tends to be the same thing now. I would put your website in the same category as having visitor parking and having greeters at your front door and having coffee and having a church that smells nice and isn't dirty and having bathrooms that are easily accessible, right? When I Google a church, and this is actually my wife and I moved to this community a year ago. When we Googled churches in our area, the church that we chose literally was the one that showed up in Google and looked like it had up-to-date stuff and had normal people in it. I know that sounds really trivial, but I just wanted to know, like, okay, if I show up at 10:30, there will be a service, right? If someone Googles your church and instead they click on the website and it looks like it was built in 1998, there's no pictures of people in there. It's just pictures of a building. So I don't really know how people are dressed. I don't really know what to expect. And then I also can't find the service time easily. I'm probably not going to show up to your church. It's not because I have any sort of malice. It's just because I feel uncomfortable and I don't know what is going on there, right? So having things like service times, having things like how to dress, where to park, what we believe doctrinally, who the pastor is he some sort of like cult leader or is he legitimate? All these, you know, kind of blocking and tackling elements that you have to nail, those need to be front and center on the website. They need to be great. And you need to communicate that you're a church that is living, breathing, and moving forward. So that, I think, is one of the most important things about a website.
And yeah, that actually all that has to do with is trust and reputation.
Definitely,
So it's
definitely.
basically essentially reputation management.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's reputation management, and it's really, it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but it's loving people well. You want to make people feel really good. And that goes for folks who have disabilities too. Like your site should be ADA compliant. Like if someone has visibility issues or is deaf or has dyslexia, anything like that, color blindness, even, that's a big one that people don't think about. It should be fully accessible for all those folks as well. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
And some churches think social media is enough and a website isn't necessary. So what's your response to that mindset?
Yeah, I think first of all, social media is a great tool for churches. I think a really well-run Facebook page for a small church is irreplaceable. It's a place for all your folks to meet, to talk, to post pictures of the Wednesday night dinner. It's all great, right? When you only have social media, though, what you're communicating to the outside world is this is us and this is not for you. It's essentially not having a welcome mat on your front door. It's instead having doors that are locked where they have to knock to ask to come in. And yeah, you're not going to have any of that like evangelism outreach that you could be getting from the website. And you're also not going to be welcoming new people into the fold easily. You're automatically making them kind of uncomfortable.
What are a few key elements that make a church website stand out and effectively engage visitors?
So I kind of touched on some of these, but first of all, your church website does not have to be some sort of crazy $30,000 thing. If you don't have the budget to hire somebody like Mir or somebody like Jeremy, then you could do it yourself. I promise. Like, you could go on Squarespace, you could spin something up. Having something is better than having nothing, as long as that something is up to date. So, I think the key aspect that you absolutely cannot afford to miss is having a website that is up to date. If you're still advertising February's potluck from last year, that's going to tell people, like, man, I don't even know if their doors are still open. So that's a key piece of it. Another key piece of it is having all of their questions answered very quickly. So they shouldn't have to dig to figure out when the service is. They shouldn't have to dig to figure out what is the music like, what is the preaching like, what do these folks believe, are they crazy? They should be able to land on the homepage of your website and immediately know all of the basics. So out of those basics, I would say what to expect from a service, including time, how to dress. And you can literally, you don't even have to have a how to dress section. You can just have pictures of your congregation on Sunday morning and people will figure it out. So time, how to dress, who's going to be preaching, like, who's the senior pastor? Did he go to seminary, or is he, a pastor that has preached at Baptist churches a lot before, PCA churches, or Mormon churches? Like, people want to know that immediately because they don't want to go to a church that has beliefs that they don't have, right? And then having all of your basic events in a really easily accessible spot as well. So if you have those things kind of squared away, then you have your basics good to go. There are a lot of other things that you could do to help make people feel welcome as well. I think having, as simple as it sounds, here's where you're going to park. Here is how we handle stuff like giving. Here's how we handle stuff like serving. Having all of those items on there is important as well. But if you're up to date and you actually check in on your website more than once every 6 months, then you're going to get 90% of the way there.
And what are the common mistakes that churches make with their websites, and how can they fix them?
The most common mistake is one that I keep on just preaching on about here is they don't update it enough. You still have events from last year up that does not communicate good things to folks. Another mistake that they make is they assume that people will know things about their church when in actuality they do not. This is a tried and true principle of digital marketing in general. You cannot ever assume that anybody knows anything about your product or your service or your church. You have to put it all front and center, and you have to put it at a second grade reading level or below. A complete stranger that has never been to church before should be able to click on your website and know, man, I'm going to feel really good if I go here. So don't use big words. Make sure that all of the important information is front and center. And I would say the other piece of it is you should be redesigning your website on a fairly regular basis. So doesn't mean every 6 months, doesn't mean every year, but if you had a website built in 1998, it's time for a new one because it again communicates the wrong message to somebody if they land on a website that looks like it's from 2008.
I've always thought maybe between 2 and 3 years is a good amount. Of course, 5 years is okay, but it's getting a little bit too long then.
I would say 5 years is like the outer range. And if you get a website designed really well, it should hold up for a little while, right? It's kind of a sliding scale as well, I would say. Like, if you put something together on Squarespace yourself and you're not a web designer, you probably are going to need to update it more often than if you had a professional build you something that is kind of meant to stand the test of time. And there are just a lot of best practices that change through the years too. Like, if we were building websites in 2012, then we would prioritize desktop, because that's where people are going on the internet. They're going on their computer, they're going on their laptop. But nowadays, I've seen everywhere from just over 50% to upwards of 90%, just looking at the actual analytics of church websites, of folks look at websites on their phones. So, a modern website should be mobile first, I would say. That should be the design primarily. It shouldn't be something that, like, if you look at it on a desktop, it looks great, but as soon as you pull it up on a phone, it's basically unusable. It should kind of be the opposite, to be honest with you. I think another big piece of this. So the three things that the internet can do for your church. First of all, it's the door knocking aspect, right? Getting new people in. Second of all, it's the welcoming aspect. So welcoming new people into the fold. And then thirdly, it's equipping. So you could be using your website to equip your church, equip people maybe not even in your church, but elsewhere. You could be providing these resources to folks who need it. And it's really not hard to do. It's pretty easy. It feels like it should be complicated, but just putting sermons on your website with transcripts in a way that's organized really well. There's this term that we use a lot, information architecture for websites, which is basically like if we were in the 90s, then we would call it library science, right? If you go into a library, then I will go to the nonfiction section. I want to read about biology, specifically plants. You know how to use the Dewey Decimal System to get there, right? Websites should be the same way with resources that you're equipping your church with. So if you're providing Bible studies, if you're providing sermons, transcripts for your sermons, devotionals, even things like kids' coloring books and kids' lessons, you should be able to present those on your website in a way that is going to equip your church, equip folks from outside of your church, and help them serve in ministry better. So those are super important. And then there are a couple of other like basics that I would say you should be doing that would fall under the equipping category. First of all, I think most churches are doing this nowadays, especially after 2020, but you should be doing your giving online. It's a bummer that, the credit card companies take a fee off the top, but it is worth it. Most churches that we've run the analytics for receive upwards of 70% of their giving completely online. It makes it a lot better of an experience for folks, and it really helps. And then another thing that you should be doing with your website is giving people practical opportunities to serve. So if somebody is just getting plugged into your church and they feel a little bit intimidated, you should have a way for them to be like, you know what? I have 2 5-year-old kids and I would love to help teach the 5-year-olds. You should have a way for them to reach out to you about that. You should have that need clearly expressed and you should have an easy way for them to serve there. And then the third thing that I've seen more and more churches do, especially since 2020 again, is a live stream. So there are folks in your community that either they're elderly and they can't get out of their house, or they are out of town and they still want to participate in the service, or the weather is bad, or any number of factors. They should be able to view the service and while it's never going to be a complete replacement for actually meeting with the body, it is really huge for people to stay connected when they can. So, yeah, I think I went off on a tangent without answering your question. Hopefully.
I think it was answered well. So, before we wrap up, can you share with your listeners where they can find the Google Ad grant that you mentioned? The grant, the guide?
Absolutely. So If you go to our website, you can just drop us a message or you can email me directly, mitch@mirroragency.com, and I'll send it to you. We also have a link. The URL is pretty long, so I don't even think that I'll say it, but I gave it to you, Jeremy. So we can pop that in a description or something, I'm sure. And we provide that guide completely for free. It has everything in it from how to sign up for the ad grant completely on your own to how to start ad campaigns, all the way down to like specific keywords that you could use. So we try to make it as comprehensive as we can. Again, it's like my personal mission in life to try to get as many churches on this as I can, because I would much rather have the church served by that than Google. So just drop us a line and we'll hook you up.
What's one piece of advice you'd give to church just starting its digital marketing journey?
The one piece of advice that I would give you is start with something. So if it's the ad grant, if it's the website, if it's a social media page, don't try to do everything at once. Pick one thing and do it really well. Most churches, that needs to be the website. If you do not have a website, start with that. It is the most important piece.
This has been a such an insightful conversation. Thank you for taking your time to share your expertise with us. And for our listeners, please make sure to check out the resources Mitch mentioned in the description. They'll help take your church's digital presence to the next level. So like we said, there's a guide and as well as their website as well. And be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening and watching from, and tune in for all our future episodes. Thank you for watching today.
You've been listening to Church Marketing Conversations. We appreciate you joining us today and hope you walk away with actionable strategies to grow your church's impact. For more episodes, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and visit faithventuremedia.com for additional resources. Until next time, keep spreading the word and making an impact in your community.